I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
We're making these beautiful individual, almost like bento bamboo boxes, all tied and all labeled. And we are going to set each table, and everybody at a table either lives together, or so there's a couple single tables, there's a couple double tables, one three table. We will set it all up. A video person's going to videograph it. And then we will come back after the guests leave and we'll clean it all up.
Nobody can decide to have their wedding on Friday night to have their wedding on Saturday. So July would really be the first time. And it's clearly not going to be before that, even if things get opened up, because everybody in June at this point is rescheduled.
The date is May 20th, 2020, and those are the voices of Lynn Buono and Skip Schwartzman, our guests on this special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is a special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman. As always, our great thanks to Sam Pellegrino for covering the production cost of these special reports. We wouldn't have been able to deliver them to you without them. Before I introduce today's guest, just a quick programming note. It's a retroactive one. We dropped a show on Tuesday this week that had Monday's date announced at the beginning of it. The reason is, for the second time in a week, I was beset by the worst allergies I've experienced in forever. I was good for nothing. I was sleeping off some Benadryl most of the day. It also happened to be my wife Caitlin's birthday on Monday, and I was cooking and celebrating for that. So I never got the show posted. I know a lot of people out there are confused, as I have been from time to time, as to what day of the week it is. You know, you wake up, you don't know if it's the weekend, you don't know if it's a weekday, we're all in our homes. So I apologize if hearing that date announced on Tuesday threw anybody further off than you already were. It wasn't my intention, and it occurred to me too late that that's what I had done, so I'm sorry for that. Today's guests are Lynn Buono and Skip Schwartzman. They are the owners of the catering company Feast Your Eyes in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They are a couple. They've been married for quite a while. They've had that business for quite a while, as we get into in the interview. They also happen to be dear friends of mine who I met through the tennis world. Gosh, I think probably, I don't even know anymore, maybe 15 years ago-ish. But Lynn and Skip are guests that I invited on the show because I did want to get one of these special reports done and devoted to a segment of the food and beverage universe that I find interesting and have for a long time. I happen to have several friends who do it for a living, and that is the catering world. It's in some ways, I think, to the outside eye, very similar to the restaurant world, but I think to people in the industry, it's recognized as something that's uniquely its own. It has a unique set of logistical challenges and also a unique set of business challenges, many of which are distinct from what restaurants are challenged by right now during the pandemic and lockdown. So I invited Lynn and Skip on the show to talk about both how they've been adjusting or pivoting, as we now say, in terms of what they're offering people in the short term, but also what some of the short and long-term challenges are in terms of contracts, bookings, scheduling, all of that. So I don't think I really need to say any more about it. I think you'll find it very interesting and informative. And with that, here is my conversation recorded just yesterday with Lynn Buono and Skip Schwartzman. Before I start firing questions your way, can I just ask one of you to just briefly tell our listeners what Feast Your Eyes is, how long you've been in business, and the range of events that you all typically cater?
We have been in business for 39 years, 82 when we were incorporated. And until 10 and a half years ago, we were strictly off-premise caterers. So we were doing events, corporate and private, people's homes, tents, warehouses, office buildings, unfinished office buildings, open fields, the whole gamut. Our work ranged from small intimate dinners of 6 or 10, which mostly you do in order to satisfy clients or possibly if it's slow, to largest events. The largest that we've done a few in the 5,000 range. We've done a couple in the 10,000, 12,000 range, outdoor events, you know, along the festival line, but catering, not concession work. We've tried concession work a few times. We find out that, as we've discovered, they serve food and we serve food, but other than that, it's very different. And 10 years ago, a little bit over 10 years ago, we bought an empty warehouse and renovated it and made it into an event venue, as well as our new commissary headquarters for all of our activity. So at this point, we do approximately 48%, 45 to 48% of our business is on-premise catering, and the balance is off-premise catering, which ranges from drop-off orders, that's about a tenth of our business, a little bit more, to off-premise events, University of Pennsylvania, large corporate stuff, weddings, mitzvahs, private social entertaining.
And broadly speaking, the division between the two of you, Lynn, what's your official designation? Are you the executive chef?
I was the executive chef and in the kitchen for decades. And then not that long ago, well, probably 10 years, 8 years, I stepped away a little bit and I am now the culinary director, which is I set the menus, I create the packages of how something's to look. And I do work in the kitchen. I do develop some recipes, but we have a fabulous executive chef. And we are like, we are all made up creatively. He came from a family restaurant, had his own restaurant, then became executive chef at Aramark. And so he has both the big chops to do the organizational work, but he has the creative and small personal chops to do weddings that are personal, dinner parties that are creative and individual.
And Skip, you are what we would call you what? The business side?
I'm the person that does everything that Lynn doesn't want to do.
Okay. So guys, tell me again, whoever's best to speak to this, or if you want to tag team on this, can you just describe, I've had no other catering professionals on these special reports. I've been wanting to have someone on to speak to this segment of the food and beverage industry. Can you just give a sense of how the sort of rolling way that this crisis has reached your door when it sort of hit Philadelphia? And then, I mean, obviously so much of what you all do is based on both annual contracts, I assume, and then also, you know, one-off events like weddings. But a lot of things that you probably count on from a distance to happen that I'm assuming on a rolling basis have gone away over the last 2 months.
Yes. We don't have any annual contracts per se. We do have one institution in Philadelphia where we do all of their drop-off catering, their daytime work. But there's not a cafe type situation there. We have, as I said, 45 to 50% of our business is on premise at Front and Palmer, our venue. The bulk of that is weddings, some is mitzvahs, and there's some corporate work. Those, of course, are booked well ahead of time. We've actually had inquiries already for 2023. So what happened for us is that at the beginning, I would say, let's say middle to the third week of February, we started seeing a skittishness on the part of corporate clientele. So we had to have hand washing facilities on site, some events that had full service where we had staff there changed and they wanted the food dropped off, some of it in individual ways. And that kind of anxiety promoted increasing amounts of change in how we were doing events. And then eventually, by the first week of March, the second full week of March, starting with the 9th, it was obvious that events were simply not going to happen. And we had to lay off almost all of our staff because we knew it was obvious what was coming in our business. There just were too many gatherings and their headcount is pretty much predetermined, which meant that social distancing wasn't really an option. It wasn't like they could disinvite half of their guests. So pretty much everything stopped as of March 9th or so. And then it was a matter of trying to project when things were going to return to enough normalcy that the weddings that were on the books would be able to be rescheduled. And that's still something that's a guesstimate for us and for the entire events industry. And more of a question mark is what's going to happen with corporate work, both entertaining and meeting stuff. Zoom and similar online video conferencing will probably have a lasting impact as companies realize that they don't have to spend the time to send or the money to send staff to meetings when it can be done, quote unquote, face to face via online conferencing. But it's still not going to work for meetings of 30 or 40 people where they're also going to entertain, where they're also going to have a meal involved or a cocktail hour. Nonetheless, we expect that similar to the restaurant situation, there's going to be residual resistance to people gathering in groups. Weddings and mitzvahs to some degree are a little bit different. The crowds are a little more amenable to being together. They're all known. It's more trusting that no one's going to show up if they're slightly ill or they're questioned. So they have a greater chance of recovering faster, but there's still no guarantee. And at this point, we have no events. We've had no events since the beginning of March, and we will have none through the end of June. That's for sure. No staffed events, I should say.
We have a wedding, our first wedding on this Sunday, where we had worked for the grandfather. We did the mother's wedding. Now we're doing the granddaughter's wedding. And so she limited it down to 17 people. We have this pretty big tent of 40 by 30 for 17. And we're making these beautiful individual, almost like bento bamboo boxes, all tied and all labeled. And we are going to set each table, and they're like tables of 30 inch, 36 inch. And everybody at a table either lives together, or so there's a couple single tables, there's a couple double tables, one three table for the 17. We will set it all up. A video person's going to videograph it, and then we will come back after the guests leave and we'll clean it all up.
And they're getting a first course, they're getting like an hors d'oeuvre box, and then separately a first and second course box.
And they'll handle the switch out of the various courses.
Correct.
Wow.
It's going to be a stacked little ribbon. It's beautiful, almost like a tiffin box on each person's table, which will have a little tag and it'll have their name and the menu. And there you go.
And it's all room temperature.
And Lynn, so each table is either if somebody lives alone, they're on their own. And if there's a family of four, like two parents, two kids, they'll be at a table together. So the distancing is kind of based on household. That's the idea.
Right. There are, I think, four tables. There are 11 tables.
So that gets at something I was going to ask you, actually, Lynn. I'm wondering, you know, I mean, you said you went, you know, you went from chef to executive chef to culinary director, but still there's a lot of creativity involved in what you do. I mean, I know when you come to New York, you guys, I've had dinner with you, and oftentimes, you know, you kind of make decisions around wanting to see what people are doing or what's different. And even if it's not the food, sometimes presentation. I would imagine that the creative part of your soul is a little undernourished right now. And I would imagine that creatively, you know, the circumstances are terrible, but creatively solving something like this wedding with this bento box solution, I would imagine on some level can we even go as far as to say that's enjoyable for you to have to test yourself that way?
Sure, because basically it's not just about the food, it's about the presentation. How is this food going to look? And the menus that I gave them were, you know, smoked duck breast, and there's shrimp in there, there's an assortment. And plus, this is the funny part, you know, you have 17 people, well, there's dietary restrictions. And who can only eat plants and who doesn't eat dairy. So it's almost like we made all these individual meals. This whole pivoting that we are doing now is problem solving and creativity. We are now also doing a meal delivery service that is, again, pivoting to our client base. And they don't want restaurant style, feasterized catering style food as much as they want more comfort food that's really handmade and well-made.
Right. Something homey, something maybe better than they could do themselves unless they're super accomplished cooks or they don't have to go to the trouble. Well, can you give an example of the kind of thing you've been doing on that front?
We started the first few weeks. My thought process was, you know, this is a pandemic. People are now worried about their health. Let us do really plant-forward foods. And we called them healthy boxes. What we found from that is we got really a great reception from some people, but our client demographic was used to more rich catering style foods. And so there was a disconnect. So we would have somebody, and we also lowered the sodium. So we did low sodium, some things, no oil, plant forward. It was pretty complicated to produce and do well. So after that, we then pivoted again and realized that people wanted our short ribs that we do. They just wanted some of the catering food that they're used to having. And so now it's a combination. If you see my Instagram, we did an Instagram post today about charring broccoli. We do a charred broccoli with a sriracha aioli that's vegan. And we have a picture of our pit and the barbecue chicken and ribs coming out of our pit. So it is an interesting combination. I have found out from our clients, though, that one of them will call and say, oh, thank God, you know, I'm eating all these vegetables now, but my husband really wants his meat. And so they can order everything a la carte.
Do you change the menu daily or how does that work?
No, we're only really doing once a week because we have a skeleton crew. One of the things about the skeleton crew is that a lot of people are either taking care of older parents or, you know, maybe have some immune problems, so that we don't have the depth of our staff. And some of our staff isn't the type to be really disciplined and, you know, follow all the rules. So we have a core group that is, we work at totally different stations. That's the cool part about not being a restaurant kitchen. I don't have a line. So we have a stainless steel table, one table that's 20 feet away from another table or 10 feet away. So we each have our own station and everybody can work and be pretty independent.
Well, the other thing is that for us, what we're doing is we're not really gearing this towards individual meals. We're gearing, although, as Lynn was saying, with the healthy meal boxes that we were originally doing, you ordered the box, you had choices, but the box had a minimum of about $150. We changed it so that people can now order a la carte, but there was a minimum in order to have delivery. Interestingly, they seem to be ordering more. Many people are ordering more. We do have smaller order, and it allowed for smaller orders that are willing to come and pick up. but we're not really competing with restaurants that are sending out meals, you know, a la minute kind of thing. It's really more an order ahead and stock up in its overall theory. The other thing is about being creative. You know, it's a wonderful thing to say. It's amazing how creative you can be if someone's willing to spend, and they're not, you know, $1,000 on a bento box presentation. I mean, they're obviously not, but, you know, that's part of the challenge, I think, for everybody who's switching to COVID-oriented food service, is I can come up with something that's really interesting that that follows various orders. If I say it's really Lynn, but and chef, that follow the rules, but you also have a price ceiling. People, you know, you can't do it irrespective of what you can charge for it. So there's that as well.
Well, what we're finding is, and it's a little bit like throwing spaghetti on a wall and see what sticks. You put something on the menu, if it's not really selling or you're listening to clients. So each week we put a few new things, take off a few things. But what we're finding is selling is I make gravy that I grew up with, and it has pork and veal and beef and lamb, and takes hours to make, and we put it in mason jars.
And for the uninitiated, we should say you're using gravy in the Italian American sense of the word.
Correct. I'm sorry.
Yes. That's okay. It's music. It's music to my ears.
A little bit of, I want Nona's cooking, or I want, and our chef is from Laos and Vietnam, and he's doing sort of some home cooking that's Asian. And I mean, people are wanting stuff that feels like it's worth the money, and it's filling. And when we do catering, it tends to be a little more precious. The meals tend to be, because there's a lot more courses and people kind of want to show off, and it's sort of a celebratory thing.
Reminds me, you know, I'm always reminded, I've said this at least in one other interview, that, you know, it reminds me after the September 11 attacks, at least in New York City, you know, the interest in the kind of, you know, what my late friend Josh Ozersky used to call tweezer food, you know, goes down, and the interest in the kind of soul satisfying, you know, rustic, home style food goes way up. I mean, that is where almost everybody's, you know, regardless of background, regardless of income level, regardless of whatever, that seems to be where everybody's impulse goes. It is sort of a fascinating reflection of where things are.
Don't you think, Andrew, that that's in part because, I mean, especially at events, at the private events that we do, but in the restaurants, as you and I, we had this conversation before, that the social aspect of eating comes to the forefront when your ability to socialize is threatened. So post 9/11, you know, everyone's feeling threatened, and you take comfort by either, you know, getting your blankie, and in the food sense, it's more comfort food.
Yeah, and also it's a weird word to apply to food that is so technical, that does require so many years of training to pull it off and whatnot. But, you know, the kind of food that people are gravitating away from temporarily, you know, you could apply a word like frivolous to it. It is something that is an indulgence. It is something that when you're worried about yourself and people close to you getting sick and dying, and you're worried about your income, I don't care who you are, the interest in sort of the more entertaining food kind of goes out the window. And you gravitate just towards something that feels, you know, very, listen, I've actually been working pretty hard the last several weeks, luckily. But when I do take an afternoon to cook, it's, you know, I'm making like spanakopita for my family, or I'm making a lasagna, or I'm, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm not really going for the triple Lutz, you know?
Well, and it's also, you know, I suspect that part of it is also, what do I want to be saying about myself? There was a very interesting piece 30 years ago during the AIDS epidemic about how fashion was becoming very baggy. You know, men's and women's clothing was becoming very baggy. And the article's contention was that, you know, it was a de-emphasis of the sensual and sexual in an era when you had to be cautious about that. There was a de-emphasis of it in fashion. And I wonder if part of it is also not, geez, there are so many serious things for me to be thinking about. I really don't want to see myself as paying attention to tweezer food.
Well, the cool thing about being a caterer is that catering, it doesn't have a set concept or menu the way a restaurant does. So you would go to a Mexican restaurant maybe, or like satay, you'd go to a Malaysian restaurant, or you'd go to an Italian restaurant, and we get to be really diverse. So our boxes are diverse too, because you could still do, you know, we have a chef from Puerto Rico, we have a chef from Thailand, we can do a taco box, or we can do the ravioli gravy box. We can do Asian food. So people can then order from us and not feel they're cornered into only one cuisine.
Skip, what's the time frame, I guess the shifting time frame that you all are working against right now? I guess the best way to put it maybe is, what's the nearest possible date that you have your eye on when more traditional events might come online? And what's the next thing? I mean, I'm not asking for specifics. Like, I'm not asking for who or what or whatever. But what's the next sort of, you know, traditional event that you guys have that's still on the books that might conceivably happen?
July weddings.
Still on the board.
They're still on. And the most strict guidelines in Pennsylvania that do apply in Philadelphia, which is where we are. Are that there's no real opening of anything until June 4th. So we'll get a little bit closer to that, and then we'll have a sense of what's going to be a little bit further along. And I'm sure we'll be having conversations with July brides and grooms. Nobody can decide to have their wedding on Friday night to have their wedding on Saturday and not know if they're going to change. So we recognize that they have to plan ahead and be able to give people notice. But we also know that they have, you know, various things that they've set up that are outside of our situation that promotes their wanting to do it on their appointed day or their chosen date. So July would really be the first time, and it's clearly not going to be before that, even if things get opened up, because everybody in June at this point is rescheduled.
And in the Life Goes On department, have people continued to book events for 21, 22, et cetera?
Yes. We continue to get inquiries. We have had inquiries that at the initial stage aren't really bringing up anything about COVID related, you know, things for the either late fall or spring or fall 2021. We have had a couple people who are asking for some kind of clause in the agreement that protects them even for things like next March and or even September 2021, which, you know, I'm not going to question. It's not for me to question anybody's anxiety, but I will tell you that at a certain level, one can be overly anxious, but that's not my place to tell them that. And we try and accommodate them as best we can. We've had very good response with pretty much everybody. We've had one or two people that have been a little bit difficult, but not to the point of it never got to the point of moving beyond a conversation between us, which is to say never got lawyers involved. Although I've heard that other caterers have had that problem. We have not.
Had that problem in what regard? You mean people trying to back out of things that are still pretty far off, or?
I haven't asked for the specifics, but between what the caterer is what options the caterer is giving them and what the people think they should be able to do, they've come to the point where lawyers have gotten involved and people have been threatening. We've not really had that. We know of one caterer who told somebody they could reschedule their event as long as it was within 8 months. Now, I don't know what the downside was if it didn't happen in 8 months, but that was the threat that was being held over their head. We're not enforcing or trying to enforce a clause like that on anybody, but we do have situations where rescheduling is not a problem. And certainly not if there's a mandate against somebody's event being held. And as well, in our case, if someone's event is September, let's say, and they decide now they want to reschedule. Well, we set up a situation where if they reschedule now, there are certain fees for opening up the September date that we were holding for them, and moving their date to whenever it goes. But we also tell them that if we get to September and we could not have held their date because of a government mandate, whatever fees they paid us for the September date get refunded to them. So they're protected in the sense that should they make a decision today when there's no mandate and it turns out that there is, they're having changed early doesn't cost them anything. So July would be the earliest. August starts looking better, of course, and then we go from there. The other thing, the thing that's really going to take the hit, I mean, the weddings and to some degree the mitzvahs, they have this, you know, greater motivation for holding their event. The number of guests in the mitzvahs, it's the child's been practicing a particular portion of the Torah for a period of time, and it's not like they can just pick up and choose another date.
Well, and what we would call sentimental value, right? I mean, there's an emotional urgency to making it happen.
Correct, and so those things will happen. But that's still slightly less than 50% of our business. So what's going to happen with the other part? Well, the other thing is that even if things do open up in July, and this is for us, our part of the country, July and August are two of the slowest months of the year for corporate entertaining because the corporations wind down because all the decision makers are on vacation in a normal year. So even in the best of times, July and August are soft on the corporate side, which is Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday catering. So there's no – that's not opening up until September in terms of opening up in the sense of there being any momentum for it.
You know, you've given a couple of examples. One was the you know, the comment, Lynn, that you made, the cater, unlike a restaurant, you know, you're not, I guess beyond quality, that you're not really, and reliability, caterers aren't really necessarily beholden to any one type of food or any style of food. So there is this, there is a nimbleness that you have that I think that serves you well right now. But is there, and either on the pro or the con side, is there anything that people who aren't specifically in the catering business, even other F&B professionals might not realize about the catering business? Is there anything that you found as you talk to people that just kind of goes right by the average person about how you all are challenged or suited to this moment?
I think catering chefs are the MacGyver of the kitchen. I mean, they've had to jerry-rig and they've had to rethink things and they've had to recreate things that are normally a la minute. So basically, I think that we're really suited to making food that you're going to reheat at home. In some ways, in catering, you are always cooking leftover. You know, you're always reheating food because there's no way you can cook everything for 200 people, sit down. A lot of times it's in a corporate setting. Sometimes it's, you know, in a big medical building and you're, you know, two hallways away. And so we're very used to how is this food going to taste restaurant quality and be parts of it pre-done and assembled. So I think we have that bit of it down. So I think we're pretty suited to doing this kind of pivoting.
And that's our show for today. Again, my great thanks to my friends Lynn Buono and Skip Schwarzman of Feast Your Eyes for joining me on today's episode. If you'd like to learn more about their company, the links will appear on the episode page for this show at andrewtalkstochefs.com and also on Apple Podcasts. And I will also link to the Instagram feed that Lynn referenced at one point in that conversation. Again, we'd appreciate it if you would please check out our Patreon page at Patreon, that's patreon.com/AndrewTalksToChefs, and consider supporting this show directly. If you enjoyed this show, please do explore our archives at AndrewTalksToChefs.com or on your favorite podcast platform Please subscribe on those platforms. It is free everywhere. And please tell your friends about the show, either by text, email, social media, word of mouth, however you like to do it. We would appreciate your support. Thanks to Wild Turkey Surprise for today's opening music and to After School Special for the music you're listening to right now. Please seek them out online and enjoy more of their music. Thanks to our engineer, Margaret Kelly, for mixing these special reports. Our thanks to Sam Pellegrino for making these special reports possible. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please take care of yourselves. Take a breath, and we will all get through this together. See you tomorrow.